All right, and welcome back to the Coast to Coast to Coast podcast. I am your host, Chadley, and I am joined with Dale out on the East Coast and Chip up in the North Coast. And unfortunately, Jim couldn't be with us today. He got last-minute tickets to Genesis, and who could pass that up? Am I right? So welcome to the pod. How are you guys doing?
Doing good. Actually feeling pretty festive here, Chad. I spent the weekend getting Christmas lights up, but they're on now, and it's a nice feel and helping me feel better after this tough weekend of losses.
Yeah, are you guys both put up the Christmas stuff right after Thanksgiving on that weekend, guys? Or are you a before or after?
No, I am definitely the weekend after Thanksgiving, and that's because I feel like if you do it before Thanksgiving, it steals the Thanksgiving feel. Like, I need to go from one holiday to another. I can't mix. Give me Thanksgiving. Let me have a day off.
Yeah, and then I'll do Christmas. Sunday morning, it was time to go get a tree. So went and did that. Santa just happened to be at the tree place, so the kids got to meet him. That worked out great. And
what a coincidence of all the tree places in all the world.
Super lucky there. So, but it's actually like, I got a lot of the interior stuff up, but it's like itching my skin that I have nothing on the exterior of the house. But I have been planning on what to do since I'm in a new place. I need a new setup. So working on the planning, and actually hopefully after this might get some lights ordered and try to figure something out. But yeah, I'm itching to get stuff up.
That's fair. I'm actually behind. I'm with you guys. I think that it's kind of psycho to put your stuff up before Thanksgiving. Sorry if you do, but I think, you know, I love Thanksgiving and I want to just celebrate Thanksgiving.
Same.
Christmas season's so long as it is. Mm-hmm. I don't want to jump into it before it's this time. It's the same thing I feel about letting Christmas sale come out in September. It's not Christmas time yet.
Which we can't stop that though. It's getting earlier and earlier every year.
Don't give me pumpkin.
It's coming out in springtime anyway. Yeah. It was spring when they were dropping pumpkin spice. Yeah.
Don't give me pumpkin stuff in June and July. Pumpkin season is September. It's autumn. So I'm just that feel like I want my this one thing to end. I don't want to get overwhelmed with it. I don't want to get on it before it's time. But I also like to do it as soon as Thanksgiving's over. You get that nice, like, okay, Friday, take a breather, and then Saturday and Sunday you can set up. I am behind this year, actually, because Boots got taken out of town on a last-minute work trip, and without her here, I thought, well, we like to go do, like,
that's no decorating fun.
Together. Yeah, we like to go get the tree together. So with her having to leave right after Thanksgiving for this this trip for her company, we're like, okay, we'll just save it and we'll do it the first weekend in December, which is good too. But
totally acceptable.
And we don't get a lot of, we decorate the house actually a lot for living in a Southern California apartment. But
is it a palm tree?
You know, we can't really decorate outside. But we like to get the Christmas tree, we decorate it, we put lights all over the house and all sorts of Christmas stuff and try to make it as Christmassy as you can when it's still 70 degrees out. It feels a little weird to be behind. I'm super excited to get some stuff going this weekend. What a great bye week for us.
God, did we need one?
Yeah, I needed one as bad as the Browns did. We'll get into some stuff, but I'm disappointed with some of the guys that ended up injured again and the fact that, you know, these fluky things, the bye week, we're not going to come out of it still like I'd hoped, as healthy as possible. But on the good news, it's a little break. It's a breather everybody needs. It's a chance to just sort of take a step back and redesign some things. And in the spirit of that, we have moved on to the holiday season and we are doing some holiday brews today. We are starting the winter series. So you guys, before we get deep into football disappointment, do we want to get into something happy, like some festive winter beer?
Well, I'm all down for that.
All right. What are you guys working with today?
So normally I speak very highly on Masthead. It's a brewery in Cleveland, which I love. We go there pretty often, my wife and I. It's good food there too. However, I got this. It's called Slay All Day. I wasn't sure if it was a Christmas ale or just a Christmas, like, or a winter type of beer, but it doesn't taste anything like, maybe I'm just so used to like 12 Dogs or Great Lakes Christmas that I have like a designated, this is what Christmas mm-hmm. beer tastes like.
Cleveland Christmas ale is a particular flavor.
Right, exactly. So that being said, Slay Ale Day is good, but it tastes more to me like just another IPA than it does a Christmassy beer. So they're kind of going in a different direction, but it's not bad. I like it. If you're not a fan of Christmas ale, maybe try Slay All Day by Masthead. You might like
Do they put something on the bottle or something that make that like tells you what makes it Christmassy?
It says with spruce tips. But then okay, on the back so I've seen it's that before. Yeah, but then on the back it says tropical. What does it say? I was reading it earlier. Something about tropical feel, and I'm like, tropical. We're talking Christmas, buddy. We're talking snow, yeah, sleigh bells.
I think that's what I've seen that before, though, and I've seen that more this year. A couple times I've already seen like IPAs or other beers with just spruce tips. And yeah. So I think that's going to be a trend, a different way to do Christmas ale besides sort of Christmas spice.
Here it is. It says on the back, it is a balance between tropical hop goodness and piney darkness.
Okay.
I can imagine that.
Yeah,
it's, like I said, it's not bad.
Taste one of those.
It's not bad, but don't go into it thinking you're getting
your Gin-tonic IPA. I got you.
Yeah. Yep. All right, what do you got going over there, Dale?
I have the obligatory generic Great Lakes Christmas, not generic, but the Great Lakes Christmas Ale. I don't get it kind of shoved down my throat here on the the East Coast.
I was gonna say that as could much only as be everyone considered generic.
Everyone in Cleveland does.
Area. But, yeah.
But so definitely have that going. Got a couple of those left. And actually, notice I'm not sure if this is the first year or not, but notice around me a lot of 12 packs in cans, which maybe it's just new around me. I have not seen before. Okay. But very got a couple bottles left here. But and I did notice while in Cleveland, it is like $3 more a six pack here than it is in Cleveland, which I sure economics, inflation, all that stuff. But yeah, just a couple is good for now based on that. But yeah. I'm going to have to try some, grab some Breckenridge or something soon here. Yeah, I haven't got to get anything.
But I mean, I feel like that's the class, like somebody was going to have to do just the classic Great Lake Christmas
Ale. Oh yeah. Right. But let me ask you this though, Dale, do you pour it in a glass and do you make it look pretty?
So I do have it in a glass.
All right, good.
That was maybe more function over form. I wanted to take two with me. I don't want to be making trips. But no, I did not have time to get very fancy with the rim or anything tonight.
Okay. All right. And then remind me, how much alcohol is in a Christmas ale?
I'm going to say 7.5 before I grab the bottle here. And
probably close to 8.
And do a double. It is 7.5. Yeah.
Nice. Okay. Well, I've got a little lighter one. I'm drinking Shiner Holiday Cheer. By Spotsyl Brewing in Texas. It's a surprise one, but Shane has brought Shiner beer here before on his trips to Texas, and I've had Shiner Bock a lot, and I liked that, and I know it's kind of a German-style brewing place, so I wanted to give it a go. It's about 5.5%. It is a Dunkelweizen kind of beer, so like a malty, dark, but not like heavy, like a stout or porter, but like a malty dark, almost like a more of a taste of a red ale, and it's flavored with pecans and peaches, and that is kind of their holiday thing is roasted pecans and peaches, and I don't know if that's like a German thing, maybe in Germany. That's like a big thing, or the holiday pies or something. That's their flavor. But I kind of see like pecans as a holiday thing. So I was digging that. And it is terrific. I'm already through one.
I love roasted pecans. You know, I used to just down those pecan pies.
Yeah. Oh man, the pecan pies. I remember used to go to what was it? OB.
The OB Farmers Market, and there was that one lady who would make handmade pecan pie. Yep. I'd meet her like every Tuesday.
She'd bring the thing home and eat it over like a 4-day period just by herself.
Yeah, and no one would. I wouldn't allow anyone else to slice. I would just eat the whole thing in like 3 to 4 days.
Having like 2 slices a day. So yeah. Funny. Chip was just running, drinking IPAs, and eating pecan pie when he was living here.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's very good. It's I've already gotten through one. It has that. I mean, it's the malty kind of red ale or Dunkelweizen beer is always something I've liked. But this flavor with the peaches and roasted pecans is terrific. So I would definitely, if you can find it somewhere. I know it's a very small brewery in Texas, but the Shiner Bock is everywhere, and that's terrific. So the Shiner Holiday Ale, if you can find it somewhere, I'm definitely going to grab another 6-pack of it somewhere along the way.
I will keep an eye out. That sounds great.
Yeah, see where you can find it, like a beer. You'll probably find it at a beer store somewhere. Like I said, it's a small brewery, but it's really popular. Okay, I guess it's time to get football. Womp womp. Ugh. So the Browns took a shot at the Ratbirds this week for their first of two matchups in the next 3 weeks, and it did not go great. Although it's hard because it could have went much worse. I have mixed feelings because I definitely picked the Ravens to win the home matchup, and then they did. And it's, I think, one of those situations where, much like I picked the Chargers to win, you feel worse when, even though the team you thought was going to win doesn't play well enough and you have a shot. And I think that was a tough thing for me because I sort of thought right now the Ravens are just playing better than the Browns. They're the better team. They're healthier in a lot of ways. I know they've had a ton of injuries, but I feel like the difference is the guys they have playing are good to go right now, especially at the quarterback position. But and the guys that they've had hurt, they've kind of had gone all season and have just kind of moved on from because they're out with season-ending injuries and they've just gone a different direction. And I thought, well, you know, let's see how it plays out. And the Browns stuck in there so tight and put up, you know, such a good performance on one side of the ball that they were right there. And it is just heartbreaking that they couldn't find a way to pull that one off.
Yeah, I think what hurt me is just the defensive performance was so stellar. I mean, who would have thought we would have had 4 picks and held them to, 16? And I mean, how often can we do that? I don't want to let the defense feel like, you know, we're not rewarding them on offense and winning games after such a performance. So I think that's what just bummed me out. I did have them going 1-1 with the Ravens. So, I mean, like you said earlier, the loss hurts because it was ugly. But I also kind of thought, yeah, if we each win our home game, we'll go 1-1.
Yeah, I agree. If this was closer to Steelers, Bengals, where we just kind of got the doors blown off of us, people are hurt, and it was just kind of a mess, and we weren't in it, I think you'd feel different. But it is kind of funny to look back and go, well, if we kind of – the goal was to split, that's still in play. So yeah. It's one of those, like, after watching it, I'm sure you were annoyed with us, Chad, and all of our dismissing of everybody live throughout the entire game as the frustration boiled over. But, man, we're so banged up.
I think one term that I really would like to get into for a second, and it's, like, basically you basically just nailed it. There's a difference when you get your doors blown off and that's disappointing. It's like, shoot, like I'm disappointed. We stunk, whatever. It's way more frustrating and there's way more anger than sadness involved when you should have won the game and you were right there and
right
there for the taking and you didn't.
I think when you get a turnover 4 times and you can't score off of them, it was just eating away at me.
Yeah.
You know, what I was thinking about as Dale was saying that too is how different Dale and I both sound on the podcast opposed to our text messages during the game.
We'll get into that in a minute.
Man,
isn't time and perspective
a great thing?
Yeah, you're right.
Sorry to interrupt your point, Dale, but like you said that word frustrating, I was like, that's what it is. I'm not disappointed. I'm frustrated because they should still be in it. They should have beat the Steelers.
We kind of become more optimistic and logical, but in the time of the game, oh dude, we're emotional and angry.
Oh my gosh. Dude, Chip, you are an emotional roller coaster during football.
So the one thing, though, just to kind of to finish where I was going to go and kind of tie back to Chip's point, if we don't have four turnovers, we're not in that game. And in the stats on actually having that many picks and losing your game are bad, like real, real bad. Like the win percentage.
Because I do know them.
Please do. I had it and I don't have it in front of me, but
I believe if I'm remembering correctly, they said after the game that teams, after four turnovers prior to yesterday, teams with four turnovers or more were 38-1.
Yeah. I thought it was in like the high 90s.
Are we the one?
I'd seen a percentage, but no, the one is the win and we did not.
Yeah, teams are 38-1 with, I believe, with four turnovers in a game.
No, I'm sorry, Chip. I said that wrong. Yeah, we would be the one in that scenario.
Yeah, that's I mean, when you hear that, you're just like, oh my god, we're the team out of every team that was capable of pulling four turnovers and not getting that win. That's the way that a terrible team like the Jaguars pull their only win of the season is by having this game where they just keep getting their hands on the ball. And you're like, holy cow, that, you know, well, no team's going to lose there. So they're obviously bad, but they had this crazy streak of turnovers. And then of course the Browns aren't able to pull that off. So pretty disappointing. I don't remember if that's the exact stat, but that number just popped in my head as if I had heard it right after the game. I just remember shaking my head.
Yeah, I think the other thing that kind of really bums me out is that there's a level of reality I'm getting out of these last couple of games in that even if by some miracle we pull off a playoff game, are we good enough to be there? Is there any hope that we could win? And honestly, looking at this offense, I don't see it.
I'm with you. And I think that's the bigger thing because mathematically the whole season we've been, I think, and tough is seeing us, you know, play poorly against the Lions, play poorly against the Steelers, knowing that they're not great, have a rough time with the Bears and the Texans and thinking as the season went on, it's not fluky anymore. The Browns are just, you know, playing to the level of the opponents and hanging in there and they're not showing anything that would make you think they're going to make that end of the season run or could compete with the best. The only thing they have going for them, which is really sad to say, is the rest of the AFC is mainly a mess. So
yeah, that was my one add there is the AFC is such a crapshoot where it just good teams losing to bad teams each and every week. Our good wins look okay. Our losses that we were close, we're like, well, maybe not. Maybe that doesn't look as good as it made us feel. But yeah, the math is interesting to still be at 6-6, still have another shot at the Ravens here coming up. To your point there on the ceiling though, the only chance is health. I think a few weeks back we lowered their ceiling pretty hard. We capped them. And I think at that time, we were not fully counting how bad the injuries were. Like, yeah, when you don't have a guy, that's one thing. But just how banged up guys are and still playing.
Yeah. So, you have guys like Jedrick Wills, who's just bad this year, and Baker, who's just bad, and then Conklin, who's out. It's like those are different in different ways.
Yeah. So I'm intrigued to see kind of how things turn around here after a little bit of rest and guys just getting a little healthier. I know we are in a spot unfortunately with Conklin and others that we're just not getting people back, but I'm interested to see how I think the the rest is really going to do a lot of guys a lot of good.
I think my question to Chad would be, yeah, the rest is going to help a lot of guys, but does rest help Baker?
Yeah, we can get into that a little deeper, but the big thing with Baker is I've been hearing a lot is from fans for different reasons. We kind of talked about it with Jim. Unfortunately, he can't be here, but you had said, you knew a lot of people who just, don't want Baker to do well right now because they're kind of mad at him. And I've heard a lot of like bench Baker because he sucks. And then Jim had brought up the point, I would like to bench Baker, but not because I'm mad at him or because he sucks. I just think I want him to sit down and rest. And I mean, what I would say about that is, we've already talked about it in this podcast, and I would stick steady to the idea we had before that if they were going to rest him, they probably should have rested him against the Lions, because then he could have came back against the Ravens, played after, 2 weeks of relaxing and resting and rehabbing. He could have came back, played the Ravens, and then immediately had another 2 weeks of rehab and recovery, and that would have been the best way to do it. And I think they kind of chickened out because they thought, my impression is they thought, well, we could sit Baker for the Lions, but like if we lose to the Lions, like it is over. And, so I think Stefanski, imagine in Stefanski's position, you sit Baker for that game and then you lose to the winless Lions. And
oh, God.
Like,
yeah.
Oh, God.
But Chad, torn doesn't heal on time. You're not going to, a torn labrum isn't going to heal.
The so my labrum point, isn't the rest that's needed. His foot and ankle.
Yeah. So that's what you would have been resting. So the whole season I've said, don't rest him because there's no real point. If you're just going to go with him and he's not going to get his surgery early and be ready earlier for next year, don't bother resting him because he has his best chance of getting better by playing and figuring it out. But to what Dale just said, I do agree. Like you could have sat him for the Lions because he has a sprained knee and a heel contusion, which are making it hard for him to move, which puts him not only makes him a little worse player, but puts him a little more at risk of getting a bad sack because he can't escape like he used to.
Right.
But I think that window had passed with the Lions because you're not going to sit him versus the Ravens. You're just
right. Not Let me ask you this there. Though. Both of you. And this is probably what every Browns fan is thinking. Does Case Keenum win that game?
That's a tough one. In retrospect,
I don't know. So I don't think any of us know. But
I mean, obviously, it's just hypothetical. But you got to ask yourself: Baker looked pretty bad. The defense was handing you that game like on a platter. Anybody could have just about won that game. Baker looked really, really bad, and I'm not going to debate that Njoku touchdown, but. It looked to me, I thought we got a very favorable call there. It looked to me like I saw it hit the ground, but I don't want to.
I thought he pulled that one off. I thought it faked looking like it bounced off the ground because it bounced off his leg. But that's just, it was a really close one. They could have called either way. Yeah. But yeah, but I guess my thought would be, can Keenum pull off that throw? Because I don't think he can. And the conversation I've had with a lot of people this year is, I think Cleveland Browns fans, no shocker, love the backup quarterback so much. And everyone is convinced Case Keenum is, they think he's better than he is. And people literally keep saying, like, get Case Keenum out there. What are you paying him for? And my response is usually, we're not paying him. A good quarterback costs $40 million. We're paying him like 5.5 or whatever it is because he's not a good quarterback. He was brought in for one reason, and it's not because he's a great backup even. I think it's because he's the only backup they could bring in that had already played with Stefanski.
He knows the offense.
One thing you want on your backup is he knows the offense and can help in any way he can on or off the field. Like, I don't think he was brought in like all these people say. Yes, he went to the playoffs one time 5 years ago or so with the Vikings, and he had a really good run. But that's it. Like, I just don't think he came out in that Lions game the Denver game. And against a pretty poor Denver defense that lost their basically elite pass rusher, he threw 190 yards. And it's like, that's not good. And I don't know, Browns fans are like, yeah, he's awesome. Get him back in there. Like, we won, but he threw for 190 yards. He wasn't good.
Well, I don't want to say he's good or awesome, but I do want to say he's healthy and rested.
He is, but I think the argument then is you just wonder, you know, is injured Baker better than a healthy Keenum? And I think the person who would know that the most is the coaching staff, who watches the two of them practice all week. And I just find it a little weird that all the Browns fans assume it's obviously Keenum, where the people who are paid to make that decision and watch it, the only people who actually know, have decided it's Baker. And they did sit Baker 1 week, from what I heard, on a doctor's recommendation that he shouldn't go.
Right.
And then he, you know, came right back out.
I think I fall on the side of just, it's not the, like, is the healthy backup better than the injured starter? Like, watching him just, even if he's not getting smashed, getting pushed, and he, like, just hobbling back to the huddle every single play, and it's like, what are we doing? Like, we're 6-6 now. Yeah, math, numbers, science, there's a shot. And I understand that's what everyone's doing. Everyone wants to make the playoffs. Baker will be the first guy to run out there. But, like, does anyone – no one's challenging his toughness. Not a person. At this point, people want him to say that they don't – all that other stuff. But, like, what are we doing? Like, the team needs to figure out if he's the guy, not the guy. Are they going to tag him? Or are they going to offer him a short-term deal? Like, they got to figure all that out. But
yeah, that's another
thing. At the end of the day, just like,
don't have to do anything yet.
Seeing him go out there hurt.
Right.
It's tough to watch. Like, he's limping around. The throwing, he's landing on the bad shoulder, like, every time. It's just like, get him off the field. Like, I don't want to see him out there and hurt. Like, it sucks.
Right. It's hard to watch.
Like, the guy gives it all out there. And yeah, it's frustrating. He's throwing everything high, and it's frustrating, but it's like, well, yeah, that's what's going to happen. Like,
yeah,
he can't plant well. His arm hurts every time he lets it rip or gets tackled on it, which those are the two options most of the time. Like, I don't know. To me, it's not the Keenum healthy, Baker injured. It's like, well, he's hurt. Someone take the ball out of his hands. Like, and
right,
and yeah, now with,
yeah, and I
with
think Chubb, if that was going to happen, it did have to be up to the coach, because for all the people, yeah, that say Baker should sit himself down, that's,
and I think now,
I don't even want a quarterback who would consider sitting himself down.
Well, of course. Oh, of course.
But well, now, to that point,
now the running back room is in better shape than it was too, right? So
yeah,
we maybe weren't in a position against Detroit to just go, okay, Keenum, get out there and game manage. We're going to run the ball 40 times. Like, health-wise, our running back room was hurt. Like, we couldn't do that. Well, you know what? We can in 2 weeks or 3 weeks. And if we don't make it past the Ravens again, like, that'll be an interesting discussion. But it's like, I'm erring on the side of, like, let's get him healthy for the sake of just being healthy. Like,
yeah. Like, well, to that, toughness is an admirable characteristic only if you're helping the team. If your toughness is putting you out there and seeing what we're seeing, I'm not happy with your toughness. I'm actually sad and miserable watching it, and I just pity you at this point. It's only Ray Lewis played and won Defensive Player of the Year and Super Bowl MVP injured. That's toughness. Coming out injured and hurting your team is not toughness. You're just showing me that you're coming back out again. To me, that's not toughness. That's just, I refuse to sit down. I don't know.
Yeah.
That's
where I'm at. Well, I mean, difference of opinions. I think, you know, I've made my thoughts pretty clear that Cleveland always says that they want guys to be tough. They bark on that Jarvis Landry speech of sitting down, resting, not going out there when you can get out there is contagious. And everybody's been preaching that for years, and then I just think it's a little hypocritical that everybody changes their tune and they're like, no, 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 people should sit and rest and relax. Cleveland is a definitely a relax and take care of yourself type of town. And so it's just a little frustrating to me that people are like, yeah, you know what? Corey Coleman, you suck. How dare you sprain your ankle and sit out for 3 weeks? Like, you need to get back in there. And, you know, nobody at one point said, maybe he should sit. Maybe he would hurt the team if he went out there. Everybody just says, you've got to be tough. You've got to dress. You've got to give it a go.
Chad, I think it's like I said, there's a difference. There's a difference between being tough, showing out, playing the game, and not helping the team. When Landry comes out injured and toughs through it, other than his few fumbles there last couple weeks.
That hurt the team because he can't play right now.
I think he's also just losing out of his prime. But Landry will play tough. And what I mean by that is he plays through injuries and still plays well and helps the team win.
But what you're seeing out of Baker, like 3 times in 3 weeks because probably he's hurt and he probably shouldn't be out there. But I just think it's double standard that we've
But he hasn't built a career on that.
We don't have anybody else. And bringing up Corey Coleman is pointless because that whole team is so there was
I'm just saying, the backup people, may have been it's better, just hypocritical. It's just hypocritical. And you can't say you know, he's not going to sit himself mid-game. It's up to the coach. And also, you don't know if you're going to hurt the team until it's happening. He's not in practice on Friday doing a walkthrough and going, I think I'm going to hurt the team if I get out there. He's looking at Case Keenum and going, I got to get out there, and I got to play, and I got to try to win this game for my guys. And I just – that's just my take on it.
No, so I think
we
he's
go
doing
more
that.
Into it
I
next
think-
week. We got
yeah, I think the argument is I think the argument's actually just it's kind of ignorant if you're just looking at it as like healthy Case versus injured Baker. Like that's not the whole argument. And I think a lot of people are to your point. And I it's not fair.
Yeah. Well, we got to move on from Baker. We got a bye week coming up and it doesn't really matter how hurt Baker is because he's got 2 weeks to rest now. So, yeah, my point was not so much Baker, it's just take your pick, Cleveland. Do you want guys to be tough and go for it, or do you want guys to sit down and sit on the bike through practices and rest? At one point, Cleveland
we'll
fans
you know.
Have to take their pick, you know?
Well, we want you to be tough, but we want you to be good.
Yeah, yeah. I guess when you're injured, it's hard to be both of those things, if you're actually injured. But, I mean, I'm the only the
Ray Lewis won a
doc.
Super Bowl MVP hurt.
I don't know that he had the same injury. I mean, I'm just going to go
out
throughout
there.
Was
that Wagner that played in the Super Bowl with like a broken forearm?
And you know what else? the quarterback last year for the Kansas City Chiefs went into the Super Bowl and played injured, and they got demolished because he sucked. So, I mean, you know, I'm waiting for his fans to turn on him and tell him he should have sat down. It's like he's trying to win the Super Bowl, man.
Have his brother sit down and we'll be fine.
Yeah, it's trying to play.
Yeah.
So back onto the game. So a lot of people were pretty concerned about the run. You know, where were you guys on the run? We didn't have much success on it, but we also, most people thought, bailed on it a little bit early.
Yeah, I mean, they were obviously stacking the box pretty deep. What was it, 9, 10 even sometimes? I don't know. They're also a strong run defense, and I think that when Nick Chubb comes out, people know eyes on Chubb. So they did a good job of shutting him down. I thought Hunt got a little hot there. Hunt was breaking off some runs, and to your point,
Hunt has the ability to make one or two just amazing misses and go.
To your point, it looked like we did kind of get away from the run. But then again, I don't know how much success we would have had we just stuck with the run. Like everyone who wants to pretend like sticking with it is going to be somehow successful. They were shutting it down pretty well and they had everyone in the box. But that's my take.
Yeah. So I only slightly disagree. I think a lot of times when you get into a game and your strength, you know, you kind of try to, you have to game plan and nobody's better at it than Belichick. You have to game plan, you know, you try to stop their best thing. And you try to, you try to take advantage of your best thing, and different coaches do it different ways. You know, I think you try to get out there and you try to put your best feature to work. And I don't know that it would have worked. I think to your point, they were stacking the box and they're a good run defense. But I would have been happier if we would have taken, just one or two drives where we just tried to pound the run to really see what we could have come up with and just sacrificed. Okay, these two drives, we're just going to try to pound it. We're going to let them stack the box. We're going to see what they can do about it or whether we can break one. You know, we have a running back that is so good after contact that maybe they stack the box and maybe he ends up making it through that first line of defense and then boom. And again, I would have been happy with kind of fading off it if that didn't work. It seems like they didn't really even give that a shot. They just accepted after two or three carries. Okay, this team is stacking the box on the run. Let's switch to the throw. And they never really went back to the run more than sporadically on second down. And I think that was probably a mistake.
It's strange. I mean, the Ravens have given up over 100 yards four times this year. Mm-hmm. And they're typically a team that's like a once a year thing for them. So it's not like they're not capable of being ran on this year. I mean, it's happened. Now you have them going against Taylor with the Colts, mixing with the Bengals, Cook with the Vikings. I mean, those are good guys, but we all know who Chubb is. And even with him coming off injury, yeah, it is a little puzzling to not see that a little more, especially given game script, right? Like, look, I get it if we're down 20 points and game script, we're in a negative game script like that, that says Hunt needs to be in the game, right? I mean, that means we're throwing to the running back more, all kinds of different things on offense.
And that stuff,
Chubb, I think maybe takes a step back, better. But like we were in it the whole time, and to not kind of push that, I'm not sure if that is how much of that is due to Conklin or offensive line play. It is hard to tell with some of this stuff with Stefanski. I think that's something we kind of we hint on every week, where it's a little bit of like, is this missed opportunity? Is there something we just don't know? Because obviously he and all of the coaches are much, much smarter than us. So that, even though that's a slim chance, I guess there could be some of that, but yeah.
So we won't dig deep into this, but to your point, when you said, you know, that's kind of game script, that is one good argument that we'll make during the bye week pod about, you know, what you do with the play calling, because I think that's an argument when you have a head coach who's not focused on calling the plays and can kind of watch how the game is breaking down. You can maybe notice that and be able to go talk to your OC and say, hey, we're, you know, these last handful of plays, this is what we had with Hunt, this is what we had with Chubb, here's what we might want to do on our next drive. And I think when you have the head coach calling the plays and the whole game, that is one thing you sacrifice, is that ability to kind of watch it happen and you know, talk over that change.
Yeah. So. And I mean, the Baker had the, and we know he's hurt, he had the third lowest yards against the total passing yards this season against the Ravens. I mean, they've let up yards, but
yeah. And I think they stacked the box and they were just they obviously watched the film and they're like, hey, let's just make them intimidated to run by putting just eight guys right there, because we think even though we give up on the pass, they might not be able to pull that off. And they were right, sadly. So how do you guys feel on the trick plays? I am usually a fan of them, but I think they're starting to get – I like them better when you need a desperate change more than when, like, you're kind of creating a drive or when you're in good position. And I like them a lot less with Odell no longer on the team.
It's tough without Odell, and when you're using Landry – like 10 yards behind the line of scrimmage. I mean, look, I like a quick pitch in a throw. Like we know he's got a good arm. I like some of that stuff. But it seems desperate in a close game. It seems desperate.
Yeah. And that's a down the field play he's been able to make a lot of times in the future. I know he had that run. He kind of tried to throw and had that run for the touchdown. And he, so it was like, okay, well, that did end up working, that one. But I think he's better utilized in a kind of down the field, let's trick the defense long enough to get a receiver a step on him and he can go. I don't want him anywhere on that portion of the field trying to make that decision. I don't want that to be a regular thing just because it broke down and accidentally worked once. And I think that's kind of right. What happened. Like they were oh, we made this work. And then on accident, he didn't do the play he was supposed to, but he ended up trotting in. Maybe he can do that again. And that's not going to keep working.
In any decent defensive coordinator knows he can throw the ball.
Yeah.
Like it's not a surprise. And you have Wink Martindale over there. Yeah. Like, come on. Like
he's also one of the fastest defenses in the league. So it's harder to do trick plays against a team that can recover so quickly.
That was actually what was tough for me about all the screen calls. We kept running all those screens and like Patrick Queen is just lighting up our world.
Yeah, they're fast. And that is like the one Patrick Queen has not been the best linebacker on the field. But
I called him out last week and said he shouldn't be a rusher. I said he shouldn't be in the NFL last week.
Well, because you know what the difference is? Last week they made him cover and they took advantage of him. And this week we let him rush Baker over and over or we tried to run, laterally, and that's exactly what he does well. So it was like, okay, that's just a poor offensive game plan.
I knew that screen. Like he's going to split and shed blockers. Like he's that fast. He's that quick. And our receivers outside of Landry aren't great blockers. So, unless you're swinging tight ends out and stuff and that's only
I'm still not sure Landry's 100% enough to do his best job at that either.
I mean, Odell was willing, but like that's probably generous.
Yeah,
like,
he was willing.
Maybe it's my Cleveland biased eye, but is it me or does Marlon Humphrey get away with pass interference like by far the worst?
He got away with a really bad one this
year. I was like, are you kidding me? He's like swatting and punching people in their helmet. I'm like, how are you getting away with this?
I feel that's kind of his game. I feel like he does get away with that. The 12-man debacle. Does anybody want to even touch this? I don't know.
Oh, that was embarrassing.
What? How do you call it? The whole series was just like, I don't like – all of it, not even just the 12 man, but the like six penalty stretch that was the entire thing was a condemnation of football rules. Like we have gotten to a point where we have so overdone the rules. It's like, oh, no, you trade out a guy. Well, no, I'm sorry.
Well, I think
I'm going to go ahead and let you do that as well.
They did pull that off twice.
It started. It actually started with the Ravens, and if I get this correctly, I'm not sure if I remember. It was like they ran the play before the refs said they could.
Correct.
Okay, so that
they were trying to rush. They were trying to rush a fake, but if you run out your kicking squad, you have to give the defense a chance to run out their returner.
Okay.
And they pulled out the kicking squad, but they were going to fake. So they were trying to rush.
Right.
And they snapped the ball, and the refs immediately blew the whistle because they had the play on hold to give the Browns time to.
So I didn't understand that kicker that we had to get our returner out there. That was what I missed.
And that's what Dale was talking about. If it's just they changed the rules to say, hey, if you're going to, if we think you're going to go for it and you run out your kicker, you have to give the defense a chance to run out their returner, and because they didn't, even though I don't think that was the result of the play, because they didn't, the refs just blew it dead before it started and they wasted the fake. Then after that, they came out and they did basically the same thing. I think the next time maybe they ran the kicker out and they ran Lamar in, and the Browns called a timeout because they had not they were trying to switch guys before 12. Other guys could get off. Right. So we ended up with 12 guys.
The problem was after that the timeout, we called the timeout and we didn't need to.
We didn't need to. They were going to do the same thing. They were going to hold it.
We still should have had time to make the switch. We didn't.
Right.
So they like panic called an unnecessary timeout.
Right. And they had the time. And the worst part was after the timeout, they weren't sure because they just gave the Ravens time to think. I don't know if they were sure whether the Ravens were going to end up punting it or still maybe even go for it. And so they had both groups ready. And essentially, screwed when them. The clock started, they still had 12 people and they couldn't get off the field on time. So it was a joke.
And honestly, I blame the refs for not explaining it. Because there's no mm-hmm. reason, like, the only reason that I could even help explain that, I had the exact same question, is that I was listening to a podcast that did go through and explain it. And it was fantasy, and they more so just kind of brushed it off as, like, this is why football is terrible. But, like, the ref should have clarified all of that to the crowd, to whoever, because, like, everybody there was losing their mind. As fans, you're like, what is happening? Like, they're talking about us having two returners, which was not the case. Like, it was so confusing from there. The fans have, I'm sure, had absolutely no clue what was going on because they were losing their minds. And then it's like, oh, okay, it's one of those things we're going to figure out 10 minutes later what just happened.
Yeah. All right. I didn't even want to cover that, but I'm glad we did because I think everybody's been talking about it. Like, there's so much confusion of what even happened there. So that was a good explanation. The other thing I wanted to cover was that final drive. Where were you guys on that? Because I kind of know where I stand, and we've talked about Baker trying to complete a final drive earlier, but there was a couple things on that drive I thought were suspect or questionable, and the two that popped out to me most were the you know, where you put the onus on Baker or on the receivers on that drive, and the Dearness Johnson thing. And
well, I think that you're right, there were some bad drops on that final drive, but I don't want to put that game on the final drive because the defense tried to hand you that game so many times before that. So yeah, the receivers let us down on that final drive, but I think Baker let us down the entire game, which was more telling to the loss.
Yeah, I think I heard on a PFF review that I was doing that the Browns drops wise were number bottom two in the league this week on catchable balls, on dropping catchable balls, which was pretty disappointing to hear. But on that drive, I kind of agree with you on that drive. I thought a lot of people have been pretty frustrated with Baker on that drive. And I was kind of frustrated that it seemed like he finally was putting some passes where they needed to be and some receivers were dropping them. And it's almost like that feeling of, oh, he finally places a couple good balls where they need to be, and right off the hands of receivers onto the ground, like two times in a row. So frustrating.
It was a tough, I mean, overall, it was a tough fourth quarter. I mean, we got three drives on the quarter, yeah. And we started off down three. We got three drives. The first drive took 5 minutes, and we made it 26 yards before punting. Like a full 5 minute drive to make 26 yards, and we punt. The next drive, we have it for less than a minute, another punt, and now we're on to, there's a minute left, we're down six, and it's like, and Chip, you've mentioned this every week, it's like, I don't know how you can have any confidence. But when it comes down to a 2 minute drill and the team's ability to execute, you can't have confidence. And we can say that's 90% injuries. You can shade it one way or another, whether it just, we're too hurt to be able, we're not executing right, the game's not going well. Like, how are you feeling? What's the emotion? But it's like, I don't know. That's what we were kind of, that's what led into it. And no part of the two prior drives do we take that ball from the 25 and we're like, right. Wow, we got this. Let's go get seven and put this away. Like, it's like, yeah. I don't know.
It's like I always say, there's that old school saying, last quarterback with the ball wins the game. But I can't say that for the Cleveland Browns.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like I'm not sure about that saying. I feel like that's only a phrase that should be used in a game where the teams are scoring every time they get the ball. At least that's how it's supposed to be used. It's supposed to be used in like a shootout game. Like every time either of these teams touch the ball, it's Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs playing, you know, the Chargers, and they're kind of on fire, and it's just passing attacks are going crazy, and so it's 41-41.
Can I flip that on you real quick, though?
Use that.
So I don't disagree, and I would say that's typically reserved for the top guys, but let me flip it with the question a little bit. So given the opportunity to either go down the field and score to win or to stop a drive to win, what would you rather? Do you want the ball in the other team's hands or our hands?
In that game, their hands. Give me a 1-point lead with them with the ball in that game.
Let me rephrase the saying really quick, Chad.
Any other team? Just this game? Because that's where I struggle.
Let me reword the saying. Last franchise quarterback with the ball wins the game.
I just don't think that is – I think I know you use that phrase a lot. I just don't think that's the general phrase. I think that phrase that you've brought up is brought up in shootouts where you just say you hope you're the last one with the ball because these teams score every time they have the ball. It's not used in a game where the teams have 10 points each in the fourth quarter.
Okay, so you don't want your franchise quarterback to have game-winning drives?
That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is the phrase you're using of the last quarterback who has the ball wins is supposed to be used in a shootout. If you're using it in any other game, you're just misusing it. It's the wrong phrase. Yes, you want, of course you want your quarterback to have the ball for the win, but would you rather, what Dale just asked, in that game, if you had your choice, would you rather the Browns are down by three with the ball, or the Browns are up by three and the Ravens have the ball?
In that game, it was a defensive performance. Yeah.
Yes, in a defensive game, you don't want your quarterback to ball last. You want to have the lead, and you want to be able to make a stop because you believe you can do it. If you've got an elite defense, you're not thinking that same way. You're not saying, like, we just the last quarterback to have the ball is going to win. You're thinking, we just want to get the lead because we can make a stop. All I'm saying is that phrase doesn't relate to every quarterback in every game. If it's December and it's raining or it's snowing, you don't want it to come down to you have to make a game-winning drive with 54 seconds left. That's a very tough situation. If it's September and each team has scored 5 touchdowns, yeah, you probably do want the ball left because it sounds like neither team is playing defense.
Okay, I agree. But
teams are playing great defense, so you don't want to have to do that.
Dale, when you have free time, and this obviously doesn't work for this year, but ask Laura if she used to want Ben Roethlisberger to be the last quarterback with the ball in his hand.
Oh, always. I mean, now if they needed to stop, they would yell, someone just play Renegade over the loudspeakers. And
yeah, I was just gonna ask, Laura might be the wrong person to ask. If you ask Laura, would you rather your defense have to make a stop or
she doesn't care
and Roethlisberger score, she would say, yeah, I would like either. I just want to
know her response is put TJ borderline, it's trust the process, they'll do what they think is right, and I believe in the coach, and there's literally nothing more infuriating to have that type of confidence.
Of course, if you're tied or you're down, you want the ball. There's a better chance your offense is going to score than your defense is going to score. But the idea is, I'm just saying that phrase is reserved for shootouts. At least that's how it's supposed to be used. Is like, you know, you don't want to score too quick because the other team will score again because each team is scoring every time they have the ball. That's the reference, I think. But I don't know. But yes, of course, I would like Baker to run a game-winning drive. I think when your quarterback is injured, your best game plan is to not put him in that position, and they just have not done a good job at doing that. And I think, you know, I've gone time and time to bat for Baker because I think they're not doing him any favors We have Nick Chubb. We have Kareem Hunt. We barely ran the ball. We didn't scheme against the Ravens' worst defensive aspects. We just almost like we went in there like, well, let's figure it out while we're out there. We just, you know, they didn't look like they were better coached, and they haven't looked better coached in a couple weeks. So we'll get to that. But
right. Before we move on real quick, if Baker is listening to the podcast, I just want to say I got all love for you.
Definitely.
But I'm just emotional, angry Browns fan. That's all this is.
Yeah, you and a lot of people, man. I was in some Twitter wars this weekend. I think it's some of the stuff is on there, but we'll get into it. The only reason I didn't want to kill Baker this week is because we have a whole week next week to decide who we're looking for at the draft, who the free agents will be, whether we like the idea of keeping Baker or what we're going to do. But I figure we better get through this game. And to get through it, we are going to shift the tide off of the only can be viewed as negative offense onto what can pretty much only be viewed as positive on the defense with Chip's dog of the week.
Yeah, so normally during a loss, we won't have a dog of the week, but I think there was a standout player here, aside from all the defensive backs that had interceptions. And there's no secret. It's J-O-K, Jeremiah Owusu-Koramara, coming in with 12 tackles, 6 solo. He got a tackle for a loss and a QB hit. But those stats I'm reading here in the box score don't do justice what he did. His speed and way to attack the ball affected decisions made by Lamar and the offense. And I think that even though he didn't have, you know, a pick or a turnover, I think he had a lot to do with those 4 interceptions. I think that Lamar had his eye on this guy. Like, damn, this guy's on me. This guy's getting to the ball quick.
You want to hear something better? This guy is 21 years old, I think barely, and Lamar can probably rewatch that game and go, dang, this guy is going to be on me for the foreseeable future.
Yeah.
Which is awesome.
And Chad, it's like we discussed how we may have brought him in here specifically for Lamar, because it was like, it was somebody gave him the green light and said, you do you now. We held, you know, we gave you rest. Now this is where you do JOK things. And man, did he ever.
And it sure looked like it, to piggyback on your point. Last week, remind me, did he play like 20 something snaps? This week he played 68.
Yeah.
He was out there for almost every defensive snap he could have been out there for. And he was spying on Lamar. He was going laterally along the field. He was out in pass coverage. He did allow 2 receptions, but only for 8 yards. So he made quick tackles. And his run grade in PFF was a 91. His overall grade, which we'll get to some of the grades later, was an 88, which puts him, I think, 2nd for linebackers this week on the all-linebacker team. Now tell me what world you get that linebacker grade when you're facing Lamar Jackson.
Right.
That is outstanding. The test was as tough as a test as it can be for a linebacker, and he aced it, which is great. He definitely deserves this.
Well, here's the only positive I could say going into our next matchup is that he has an entire week to sit around, study what he did, figure out how to get better, and let's see what an even healthier JOK can do next time.
Yeah, he's just 1 week back from his injury, so that's good. He was used correctly, and on that same note, it looked like, unlike the offense, the defensive game plan was exactly what you wanted. They rushed Lamar, but contained him. They had a spy on him who was actually fast enough to keep up with him and throw him off. The 2 defensive ends for this team, the 2 pass rushers, just terrorized him. And although they didn't get to him as many times as we wanted, they made him make bad decisions, or they led him into JOK or Walker, who were able to bring him down. And they really messed with him this week. The question that brings me to is, even though it might be too little too late, has Joe Woods figured it out?
I mean, this, they said he fell because he didn't have a position and teams didn't know what to do with him. And our first reaction was, spy on Lamar Jackson. That's what we need him to do.
I think and, there was a reason he wasn't drafted in the first round, and it's because he has some limitations with his size and things. But the Browns saw him in the second round and thought, hell, for a second round pick, if the only thing he could do, which I don't think this is the case, but if the only thing he can do is go sideline to sideline with Lamar, worth the second rounder.
Well, I mean, that's Bill Belichick's quote when he's dealing with the scouts. Don't tell me what he can't do. Tell me what he can do. And when you have what he has, there's value in that. And especially in our division and in the direction the league is heading with all of these quarterbacks that are mobile and running around and everything else, like he has a very valuable skill set now.
Like, even some of these throwing quarterbacks can run. You've got guys like Herbert who is happy to take off, but then you look at guys like Fields and Murray and Lance and Lamar, and even guys like Tua who can scramble a little bit, Watson, I mean, who eventually will be a quarterback.
Tannehill, if you're not watching, is going to be behind you.
Jed, Tannehill. I mean,
Tannehill, the GOAT running quarterback. No, he's right. So Tannehill was actually a transition. Wasn't he a receiver? And then they switched into quarterback. Yeah. The guy's fast. For an old guy, he's still fast. But to Chip's point, Dale will try to work Tannehill into any quarterback conversation, and we love it. He's having another good year, though. It's getting harder to make fun of you for Tannehill the more he keeps repeatedly succeeding.
Yeah, oh, yeah, I would agree with that.
I don't even think he's had that.
I just enjoy every time he works Tannehill into the conversation.
He's underrated on the run.
Yeah, like, he's fast. He was brought in as an athlete, and I think that's where he went wrong in Miami. Yeah. Was he was treated a little too much like an athlete, probably. So what do you guys think on Joe Woods? Is it apology time? This is another game, and that's multiple recently where his defense has held together, 3 weeks in a row where they've shown a pretty strong performance. And this is the seventh game of this year. And what have the Browns played? Is it 12? 12 games. Mm-hmm. The Browns have held seven teams to 16 points or less. So for all the fire Joe Woods talk in week two, is it time to say, ooh, this is a potentially pretty good young defensive coordinator?
I'm at this point in the season, like, reserving judgment on just about anybody solely based on injuries. Okay. Like, it's so hard to have a definitive take on a coach, an entire position group, and even individual players who are, unless they're healthy, and we only have like four of those. Like, there's just so few that it's hard. And the one thing that I know we've been pretty disappointed with, a handful of guys in the secondary, but defense just it's not sticky, right? Like, it's not a consistent thing. It's not like offense where guys who are good are consistently good. You have defenses that get hot for a year and have crazy numbers of turnover because there's a lot of luck with it and things like that. So it is tough when you think about just like the variance that really comes with defenses in general. But yeah, Chad, I would say like they are holding teams down to numbers that they are not normally at, which is
Browns
really
had their offensive numbers. If the Browns were just averaging, which is pretty mediocre, 20 points a game.
Are you adding the Patriots game into that?
That didn't happen.
Yeah.
Yeah, that didn't happen.
Yeah. Right. I mean, you got to, okay. You have three games in a row and three of them, or four games in a row. Three of them are elite okay. level defense and one is not. Is that you don't think that's good? You think
it's, no, I think that's outstanding.
Name me the defense who is perfect every week. You're gonna find somebody, and if you're gonna get out schemed by somebody, and his name is Bill Belichick, I'm gonna go okay.
Yeah, you take that out.
And I'm not saying that this guy is amazing. I'm just saying, you know, the season started bad. The first 2 months were bad. In the second half of the season so far, things are looking quite a bit better. And this is still a young defensive coordinator in his second year with totally new personnel. I just have to wonder if you know, the typical Browns, like, we'll call it impatience. And I've been a victim of this too, where you're upset and you're frustrated with guys not doing well enough. And I think we've been sort of led to this world of fire them next. Who's the next guy? Because we lived in a world where coaches were fired every year or every other year. And I think this might've been a case, and I don't know for sure. I'm with Dale. It's not definitive yet, but patience and letting a guy develop might actually pay off. Because if it were up to Browns fans, this guy would have been fired either after last season or after September as just a majority. People would have been like, let him go. And now it's looking like with some time to develop, the offense has let them down, but the defense has done their part most of the last month or two. And I just think that is a testament of, you know, right now, I think half of the fans are ready to fire Stefanski. Get rid of Stefanski. The offense is underperforming. And I think there's a good argument for just wait it out and see and let guys give guys a chance, especially coaches, because this isn't on a time frame of athletic ability or youth. Give some guys a chance to develop, learn from their mistakes, and get better. The more disappointing part is when they don't show that, but you got to give them some time, I think, sometimes.
Yeah, I'm not ready to get rid of Stefanski, but there were a few comments in his latest interview that bothered me.
We'll get to it next week. I think we don't have the time this week. We'll get to a lot of Stefanski press conferences because I probably know exactly which things you're talking about, and I totally agree.
You know, but you heard it.
The time's going, and he's not going to have another press conference. So next week when we go over our sort of bi-week team review, we will go over that. But it's just not time quite yet. We'll leave that hanging. One more note on this defense is that they held Lamar to a PFF score, and I'm waiting to hear all of the Ravens fans say that Lamar should, you know, sit down, but they kept Lamar. They caused four turnovers, but also held Lamar to his career low PFF score, which I think, did I write it down? Maybe I did. There it is, which was 36. That is Baker Mayfield's, that is going down to Baker Mayfield's injured worst score ever. They held Lamar to a 36 PFF grade where he basically had one really good desperate toss and two good scrambles. And otherwise he just basically made mistakes the whole game. And I just, man, look forward to the day where they can do a little bit of that consistently. Defensively, we can probably move on. We're going to go over some PFF scores in a minute here, but let's hit this comment that you just made, Chip, because we talked about it a little bit, and I do think it's a hilarious thought.
Yeah, here's what I want to ask Browns fans. Did this all start from one bad route from Anthony Schwartz?
So what Chip is referring to, and he brought it up earlier this week, and I just started laughing because I had thought it once before, and I didn't bring it up in a podcast. And I thought, oh my gosh, we have to talk about this. So for those who can think back to, was it the Texans game?
Yeah, I think so. They had a couple turnovers on us, yeah.
Early off in the Texas game, Baker Mayfield threw a pass, and Anthony Schwartz had cut his route short and basically made his cut but then stopped instead of running it through.
Didn't look at Baker, didn't like attempt to continue his route, stopped.
Just basically almost as if
rookie move.
I'm running this route. Yeah, I'm running this route. I don't think the ball is coming to me. I turn expecting not to see it, and it's flying over here, and the defender catches it. And not only did it turn into an interception, which he might have had a chance to break up, he's not right there to make the tackle because he stopped running that route. And that's what led to this defender running back, Baker Mayfield, trying to make the tackle, which is where he very clearly subluxed or dislocated his shoulder, leading to this labral tear and this whole series of injuries and bad play, because I don't think it's even in doubt that he has been a different quarterback following that than he was before. And so we're wondering where Browns fans are at. Is this whole season's demise based on one bad route by Anthony Schwartz? I think Bill Belichick would have had words for Anthony Schwartz, and he may have not played for like the next five games because
Right. And Chad, here's what I'm looking at real quick. I haven't looked at this yet. We put 29 against Kansas City. We put 31 on Houston, and we never broke 30. Oh wait, no, against us Chargers we did. Excuse me.
We had one really good week against the Chargers.
Other than that, it's just been a bunch of like 10s, 12s, 15s.
Yeah, which is why I think so much of this is Baker's injury is the impact. And people have told me, what about the Chargers game? And I said, maybe in the Chargers game, he was feeling better. Although I think, if I remember, in the Chargers game, he went down hard. Or was it the game after? And he really tweaked that shoulder again, and it definitely got way worse. And so, you know, injured, starts to heal a little bit, then gets way worse. Very clearly, that was the moment where this season – we didn't know at the time where this season was heading to a spiral. So I don't know. What do you think, Dale? Who's to blame? Is it Anthony Schwartz all along?
I don't see how you could see it any other way.
All right.
I mean, that was one
the
of
coast to coast 17
targets he's had on the whole season.
Podcast blames Anthony Schwartz. And to be honest, he's barely been out there since. He's been a pretty big disappointment.
No, that's what I was going to say. I mean, he's just not getting time. So maybe it is a little Belichickian with all of the injuries and everything.
Yeah, he's been injured a little bit, but he has been underutilized. And who knows, maybe it's some stuff like that.
We also expected that too, though, just with him and his college background and everything. We talked about that very early on.
The developmental guy. Yeah, I still stick to that. We were right. He's developmental. They drafted
him because
he
can
do one thing better than everybody, and that's run. And he just can't play receiver quite yet. I am disappointed, though, because I did think he was going to come out and just clear out the defense by running some giant routes. But because Baker doesn't have the arm right now, it's just pointless because I think
and he wasn't getting out there with Odell. Like, he's not seeing the field.
Yeah.
And, yeah, that role is necessary, and we screamed for it last year. But when you're running 12 personnel and you got two tight ends out there, like, there's only so many routes, and the guy running straight down the field a lot of times is a distraction in this Stefanski's offense. Like, that's not the target. He'll take his 2 to 3 shots a game, but like, that's it.
Just have Jarvis.
If you're a Schwartz type player and you're getting on the field for, let's see, we're in 12 games and he's got 17 targets. It's just not – you're going to get a couple a year, like maybe. Yeah. Okay. So, yeah, it's something I'd like to see more. I'm very interested to see what happens next year with that and him getting better and stuff. But it's all clearly his fault.
You guys might be able to hear in the background whiskey screaming at me.
Yeah, I heard. That's what she did all night when we slept over.
She's obsessed with the amount of time this podcast is taking.
Who isn't?
And now Mr. Peanut Butter can hear her and is scratching at the door. So we better get this thing moving before they overtake the room. So next up is some more bad news. We're hopping into the injury clinic, and I'll be brief with this one because it's so disappointing. We want to talk to it, but after waiting for one of the guys, because I'm a trench guy, I love the linemen, for one of the highest scoring, most consistent players on our team to get back on the field, finally, Jack Conklin, who, by the way, was our, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5th highest scoring player on PFF for the season when he was healthy. Excited to get him back on the field. He comes back from that elbow. I think they thought the same thing with Kareem. We can get him in there, and then he can work it finally, and then have a whole 2 weeks before he's got to work it again. And he goes down early in the game, which I think, again, changed the offense completely. And the fear today is that he will miss the whole rest of the season with a patellar tendon tear. So just for those who aren't familiar with it, this is where the kneecap attaches to your tibia, the big bone below your knee. That got ripped away, probably not from the tibia, probably from the kneecap. And what they're going to have to do is they're going to have to go in and reattach that tendon to the bone, essentially. It is a super serious injury. It is on the level, if not worse, as an Achilles tendon repair. And the rehab is long and pretty grueling. He might not be able to put weight on it for a little bit. He's going to be in a brace for several weeks where it's not even allowed to bend. It's got to be immobilized. And little by little, they can add a couple degrees of bending to it. He's going to end up in somewhere between like 14 and 20 weeks is when he's going to be getting through his basic muscle activation and stretching exercises and be allowed to begin just forward treadmill running, just to give you an idea of the time frame. So you're looking at, you know, 3, 4 and into 5 months as this guy is getting running, and jumping is going to happen somewhere between 4 and 6 months.
Oh, he's not doing that.
Yeah. Which is just for practice, not for anything in real life. And his
I do want to practice stuff. I do have a question there on that. So to yourself as a former lineman. So when you think about this, I'm sure you probably remember the name of our defender quite a while ago who jumped on a play and tore both of his at once.
Yeah, LaCharles Bentley.
Which seems impossible.
And that ruined his career.
Yeah, it was done. But so can you talk? So you talked about the bending and moving. Can you talk about kind of like the explosiveness in comparative positions, or just what's necessary from someone like an offensive lineman who isn't maybe needing to always maybe explodes a bad word.
Which I get it. I get what you're saying. So he's not a runner. Like, he doesn't have to take off. He doesn't have to.
Right.
On run blocking, of course, you have to push forward, but he's a right tackle. He's also has to go back.
He's got to take a step back. He's got to do his pass sets.
Yeah. Right? But he still has to explode off that leg to step back, because what the patellar tendon does is it attaches to your quad from and goes basically from the kneecap to your tibia. So it's what, when you're sitting down, it's what, when you're sitting, makes your leg straighten. So if you just kick your leg up from a seated position and squeeze your quad, that your patellar tendon.
We're all doing that at home right now, as you explain.
Yeah. And then if you put your feet on the ground and you basically stand up, that's the same motion. Your thigh, your quad is straightening the knee just with your foot on the ground. So the rest of your body moves. So from a lineman position, you're thinking that patellar tendon needs to be strong enough for somebody with a massively powerful quad who can squat 400 or 500 pounds to be able to lift his heavy body from a squatted to a straight position and kind of explode upward or launch himself backwards so he can get in a position for pass blocking. So it's going to be a really essential thing for him. And the bad news is that can you guys hear Whiskey? I just realized how close Whiskey is.
No, I haven't.
You guys see her?
I didn't hear anything.
She's so adorable. All right. Get out of here, little kitty cat. All right. She was just sitting. I'm going to crack up if we can hear it during the replay. She's just sitting under my microphone, just purring so loud and rubbing her face against the corner of the microphone while I talk about this. So essentially, anyways, it's the explosiveness of being able to go from a bent to straight knee position, or at least in that motion. And the sad news is, according to a lot of statistics for athletes, and this is from all levels of sports, so it's a little different, but only about 50% of people can return to a starting level of sports after this injury. And out of those people, most of them don't return to their previous form. 73% or something in that range do. And for those that do, it usually takes between 18 months and 3 years. So what you're looking at right now is a right tackle who is likely to not be good if he plays at all next year, and is very much probably slotted into, unless he just has a phenomenal recovery, slotted into a backup position for next year while he has time to recover more and regain his actual athleticism. He'll regain his strength first, but being able to explode is going to take time. And again, only about 50% of people who have this injury historically return to sport. Now, those numbers are skewing because as time passes, they get better at these surgeries and the rehab. And so the numbers are going up over time. I think the most recent one I saw was over the last 4 years or 5 years, like 70% of people have been able to return to some capacity, but that didn't include whether they ever became a starter or they ever were good again, just whether or not they returned to sport in general. So it's tough to tell. I wouldn't keep my hopes up for him. I would hope for the best for him, but I would say this is a gap that we didn't expect going into next year, where we now have to find another right tackle, because you can't depend on him to be ready for the beginning of next year, and you may not ever have him at a starting level again, which is disappointing. But realistically, if he's going to come back, his best chance is to just be with the team and have time. So we'll see if that can happen. Sorry, such a downer, right?
Yeah, very much so. I did this not is the realize only injury. It was as bad as,
yeah, as bad as it I is. I always talk about the Achilles as like the worst football injury or the worst sports injury. Technically, this is a worse injury with less chance for a full recovery. The only difference is this is so much rarer of an injury. You just don't see it as often.
And so, honestly, that video of him like walking by himself and stumbling was brutal. Like, what do we do?
Yeah. Here? Yeah.
I agree. And it's what we talked about before. I thought the injury, it was hard to see. I watched the replays. I couldn't really see what had happened. But the way that, since this is a tendon injury, it doesn't necessarily have to twist the leg in a weird way. It's just the tendon is firing, the foot gets locked in some position, the quad pulls, and it pulls the tendon off the bone a little instead of your leg being able to straighten it. But it does fall back to what I've said over and over. When a player goes down and he gets up looking more upset than hurt,
right,
you're looking at a probably worse injury, because he tore either a ligament completely or a tendon, because once it's torn off the bone, it may not hurt as much anymore, but they know what happened, because if that muscle extends, it's the only muscle that extends your knee. So it's not like there's something else that can help do that. He tries to straighten his leg and it's just not going to happen. So he's like, oh, it hurt. I heard a pop. And he tries to stand up and it just collapses back down. And they know I can't push down my foot, or I can't straighten out my knee. So that's a disappointing one. So, but we'll see. I mean, it's just a bummer, because obviously we can get somebody better than Blake Hance, who's in there now, but he has not been a starting. He hasn't even been a backup level right tackle this entire time. So, yeah, I'm not sure what you do there. So otherwise, moving on to some different things, that was kind of a downer, but at least I feel a little better that fans kind of know, because I don't think most people understand how rough a recovery this will be. We should be rooting for him.
Yeah, all the fans will tune into this part of the pod and get that take.
So short headlines of the week. We better call this a close pretty soon. There was a lot of talk about Miles and Lamar kind of chatting it up, not only after the game, but after a couple plays. You guys have a problem with that or no? I know a lot of people were really upset.
What? And I didn't hear any upset.
I think that's just admiration and frustration. Twitter.
I agree. I think it was more the idea of Lamar is so good, but Miles is so good. If a quarterback actually gets away from him or bests him, it's a lot more of a respect and admiration thing than it is them being mad. It's more like an appreciation for, wow, man, that was pretty impressive because no one else can do that to me.
Almost had you.
And right.
Just a lot of the, like, people, the coyote. I thought it was like, man, I almost had that Roadrunner.
I thought it was a very admirable thing. And I also think it was like Lamar telling Miles, damn, if you had started anyone else at quarterback, you guys win this game.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people are just sad because at the same play where Miles kind of dapped or patted Lamar, Clowney was throwing his helmet on the ground. And a lot of people in Cleveland like that, you know, that fury and that anger. And they want Miles to feel as mad as Clowney. I think the only difference is Clowney constantly comes close to a quarterback and doesn't quite get him. Miles does not. If Miles gets close to you, you're down. You better hope you hold on to the ball because he's taking you down.
Miles kept whiffing on those run plays and turning Miles around watching people run past him. Well, he's making Clowney plays is a little better on the second level.
But I like both guys. I like both pass rushers. I like both reactions. I'm happy with Clowney being passionately furious that he couldn't get Lamar and Miles being impressed because I think that's going to take him into the film room and he's going to figure out, okay, Lamar got me. How can I get Lamar?
We saw what happened last time. He was emotional and he almost murdered somebody. So we got to watch.
The only thing that scares me about like Clowney's take is that he's playing to win, not like stat padding. Okay. And when you start to realize your playoff hopes are dwindling away, your motivation starts to dwindle away.
Yeah, but weren't you the one that texted me that Miles is only interested in sacks? Well, he jumped up and tipped a ball that led to an interception. Oh, that was
unfortunate timing because two plays in a row.
Dale texted me, Miles is only interested in getting that sack. He doesn't care about anything else. And then meanwhile, Miles dipped on the sack to jump and swat a pass that ends up.
He had like a run stop and then a batted ball, like, two huge impact plays like immediately after I said that, but
yeah,
that's what he was like. Like he was getting burnt on the runs. He's only going for sacks. Like
you guys didn't even know that I secretly added him to the text chain. So he's been listening the whole time. Well, I think it was just a news story that wasn't really a news story because a lot of people were angry. I also saw one that said Stefanski or Woods should be fired after the next loss. Where are you guys at it for that? Because we are going to have a next loss eventually.
I don't think firing is on the table, but I do want to get into the next pod and start to discuss some of Stefanski's comments and his stubbornness to give up play calling, his saying that it's not a fair take to discuss bringing in the backup, which is clearly a fair take.
Yeah, even if I don't agree, I think it's a fair conversation to have. It's the biggest debate ever.
We can get into that, but I think that's the right answer at the podium. I don't think that's the right answer, but that's the right answer at the podium. And we can get into that next week, but you can't kick your quarterback when he's down.
All right. Well, Chip's falling asleep. I'm scrambled and went from sad to happy back to sad. And
the AFC is still a disaster, so we still have a shot here, boys.
They're kind of bailing us out, just like the Ravens did this week. They're kind of
the Chargers sure did. You talk about headlines; it's not roses and sunshine for the Chargers. So,
yeah,
it is unfortunate that a few of the folks ahead of us have those tiebreakers. But
yeah, and they showed the playoff standings this week around the end of that game, and just about all but two teams in that playoff push right now have already played and beaten us. So that's pretty disappointing.
Yeah, given the schedule. It's pretty tough.
They did the playoff run on NFC and AFC, and it just seems like whoever we're playing is making a playoff run. So it's disappointing, but all right, we better call this a close. This was a long, dreary one, and I think everybody's ready to put this one behind them.
Sounds good. I'm excited to jump in on the bye next week and get prepared for round two against the Ravens.
Yeah, and we won't have a ton to talk about it for them, but we will cover what we think they should do compared to the last week. We will talk about, like we said, the midseason, what would have been the midseason recap, and just the state of the team and what we are disappointed by, what we're looking forward to, and where we all stand. So join us next week. This week was not my favorite podcast. I don't think it should be anybody's, but it is a good way to kind of vent it out and get an idea of where you really stand on things. So thanks for joining us, and follow us on Instagram, Twitter. It's Coast, the number 2, Coast X3. And we could use all of the reviews and follows we can get. We've had a really good turnout so far, and we're pretty excited by it. But just to keep things rolling, feel free to like, follow, subscribe, and leave us a couple good reviews. Save the bad reviews for the end of the season when we have a chance to switch to a new format or name. And we would appreciate that. All right?
All right. As always, good tuning in with you guys.
Happy bye week.
See y'all next week.